Episode 501.
501?
That reminds me of some clothing. What was it? 501. Yeah, my hat size.
Yeah, not your jeans.
What? Mm-mm. What's wrong with my genetics? Leave that out of this.
Oh, well, that's a topic for another day.
Where do we start there? Yeah. I mean, for one, this is a kid-friendly show. We can't really go too far.
Yeah, for two, yeah. It's obvious that the DNA strand's a little bit shorter on your end.
I resemble that comment. Guys, what an episode last week.
Oh, wait, maybe it's my end. I'm the short one. Well, hold on.
Is my volume good to you guys? Am I okay here?
Yeah.
Probably something you should have asked us before we started recording. But yeah, it's fine.
Now. I like to do that live.
We'll do it live.
Fix it in the mix. Yeah, what an episode last week. It was great having Max and Travis back on.
I enjoyed it.
It was interesting editing, though. It was very, very weird to edit because everything was off kilter. So let's hope
I blame Travis.
We've never recorded that many people at once, so who knows what the deal was.
But not in
was
public anyway.
Nothing I'm lined sure. up as it should.
Yeah.
Again, not in public.
I still blame Travis.
Let's just blame Travis.
He's not here to defend himself, so I like to place the blame that way.
He did. He was talking about the mic he was using. It was an inexpensive mic, and I did notice a weird thing with it that I had not experienced with other microphones. There was this weird 10K peak that I had to edit out because it was like this wispy air. It was almost like a weird clipping, and I was like looking at the waveform like, that is something funky with this microphone, man.
Wasn't he just using
I just
Apple,
realized something.
It was a knockoff of a Sennheiser or something, I think.
I thought he was using his Apple earbuds.
No, he gave me a different audio file.
Oh, of course, microphone. Yes. So what we
and that's what I was about to say. I just realized that's what he did. Maybe that's why you were having some lineup problems. No joking.
I had the regular file as well.
Oh, you so did.
So like the earbud audio, I synced to the, I lined them up together.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fascinating insight into the world of podcast production.
Let's talk
listeners.
About podcast editing.
Podcasts.
I mean, for what it's worth, a lot of people don't realize that, like, you spend a lot of time behind the scenes.
The talking is the easy part of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's kinda my like favorite part.
Playing gigs. You get paid to unload and load up gear. The playing part's the fun part.
That is a fact.
And the setup and teardown, that's the part that takes a lot of time and it's a pain in the ass. So,
speaking of gigs, I got contacted by a guitarist I was talking to last year, guitarist and singer, actually. And he was like, I still haven't found a lead guitarist that I want. Do you want to come and try? I'm like,
I will be your David Gilmour.
I mean, I didn't use those exact words.
You didn't?
But maybe I did. Oh, no, the exact words I said were, I'm not Eddie Van Halen. Just let's start off with the fact that I'm not Eddie Van Halen.
But I am a David Gilmour.
Yeah, I'm more of a David Gilmour.
Well, I'm not an Eddie Van Halen.
Definitely closer in size, age, grayness, and playing style to Gilmour, I think. But yeah. But yeah, we'll see what happens there. Who knows? It's been a good week for me, though, gents, I have to say.
Yeah.
So on the back of Travis talking to us about what fuzzes we should build, I've bought another kit. And I looked at it, I was like, this is really easy. And I realized that I've now passed absolute junior beginner stage of kit building. However, I do have a question for you, Bri. I have bought some leaded solder because it flows easier.
Mm.
But what precautions should I be taking to protect my few remaining brain cells whilst I am working with leaded solder?
Tip one, do not eat it. Do not. I've literally seen people
do not eat it. I misunderstood it is not you earlier. It is not for real.
It's not a tasty treat. It is not a taste. I only say that because I literally have seen people cut off a piece of solder, stick it in their mouth for a minute while they're fiddling with something. I'm like, no, that's lead. What are you doing? Don't do that.
Brian, it smells like maple syrup.
That's all right, bub. It's just for a minute. I'm like, yeah, you're literally, that's like sticking a piece of lead in your mouth and just swirling it around. Ugh.
That's how I squish down my fishing weights. I bite them down, squirt them down on the line so they don't come off.
People do that as well.
Yeah.
But I would not recommend doing that. I always, before I touch anything, before I eat anything, I always go wash my hands, that sort of thing. That's especially if you have kids around.
What about the fumes of leaded solder?
You want to get right above it and just...
Yeah, but if you're doing a lot of it, you really need a fan to kind of blow it away.
I've got a little fan. Yeah. So if I just have a fan blowing the fumes away, we'll be all right. I won't get like some horrible...
I would say...
They make those little fume sucker stations.
Yeah, I mean, so the political version is you needed a station to suck the fumes away. However, I have known people just to take a fan and just kind of blow them away. I've known that.
Yeah, so
that is
not an official recommendation of the Chasing Pod Tone podcast, but you have known people to do that. I get where you're coming
from. The Chasing Pod Tonecast, yes.
Yeah, we are definitely the Toning Chase podcast.
That's right.
Okay, so yeah, I got some lead solder. I got myself a green ringer kit, but what I'm really excited about, Bri, is the enclosure that I made for my last pedal. Now, if you remember last week, I was telling you I was making all kinds of beginner's mistakes. I was overspraying. I was having... sanding down and all sorts of stuff. I really shouldn't have bothered because this crackle paint I bought is insane. And
it looks great.
I've learned a few things. Did I show you, Blake? I don't think I showed you yet.
Mm-mm.
Look at my lovely enclosure.
Oh, I like that.
You know what pedal that would be perfect for is, his name escapes me, of course. 80s band with the guy.
The 80s band was a guy.
The misogynist 80s guy.
Bruce Steel Panther?
Steel Panther. Yes, thank you.
So, yeah, now you are bringing up a subject that's a little bit sore here because the minute I bought it in proudly, and so for the listeners, I've used a black crackle paint over a very vibrant pink.
I like it.
It looks like sort of multiple heavy metal logos all meshed together. Or at least that's what I thought. When I took it to my wife, she looked at it and said, "Now, that looks like leopard print. That looks like something a chav would buy." I'm like, "Oh, thanks for that." A chav, by the way, Bri. And I'll give you some more instruction on the finer points of the English language and its developments in the Patreon, where I shall teach you a secret hidden language. But a chav is not a nice word. It's like a diss against an English redneck, I think. That's what she's saying.
I don't know anything about chavs, other than you wear them whenever you ride horses and stuff.
That's chaps.
Oh, nothing different.
That's very different. Do you own some chaps? I suspect you do.
No comment.
I think that's required in Martinsville. If you don't own chaps within 24 hours of moving there, they kick you out.
There's multiple uses for chaps, right? You know, I'm just saying.
Where are we going with this? I'm frightened already.
I feel like what Brian's referring to might have something to do with the language you're going to teach us later.
Well, maybe it might. We'll find out. I'm so happy with the finish. And I decided I'm going to take it to the next level and actually put labels on it that I'm not going to print out myself with my little label maker. So what I've done is I've ordered some white slide transfers, water slide transfers of lots of different letters, like the kind you would put on a model aeroplane if you were building it when you were, about a 48-year-old man or whatever. I'm just going to like put one letter under each knot. I'm not going to try and spell it out because let's face it, I'm going to get the kerning and leading completely wrong if I try and place individual letters in a word. So I'm just going to put like a little T for tone, a little V for volume, and a little S for gain. Sorry, sustain. And that's going to look professional, I think.
I mean, what if you did it like ransom letter style, where you intentionally make all the letters different and crazy?
I thought about that. Yeah. It would just look like I made a mistake.
I say you just take a little paint marker and you just make your own font.
I mean, I thought about that. In fact, I have bought a set of stencils for doing that, but the smallest stencil was a bit too big. And I thought about buying the paint markers. I was like, you can buy silver paint or white paint markers.
Yeah, they were good.
They will work good, but no, I've picked a particular typeface. I've picked a nice white slide-on transfer. I'm going to try and slide them on, varnish over them. Jobs are good and bry. The very first of my new line of pedals is rolling off the line as we speak. It's only taken.
And what are you calling?
Oh, I've got a name. I'm not gonna. All shall be revealed.
I mean, you got
Jed's
pads. You're gonna put Dick's pads.
Oh, whoa!
Whoa! And that's your short name, right?
Yeah.
Dickie Oliver. You're not going by Dickie Oliver or anything.
Who has been
in a different industry? Maybe
rumors. Yes.
is that your Pornhub name, Dickie Oliver?
Dickie O. It's my Dickie porn star name. The Big O. They call me.
Oh man, jeez.
Who is it who brought that up on that? Someone brought that up on Facebook.
That's why I brought it. Yeah, because somebody just said something like, why don't we ever call you Dick or something?
And I'm going to answer them directly. It's because I've been very cleverly skirting around that fact for 3 years now and avoiding anyone noticing. Thanks for bringing it out. I'm never going to live this down now. It's going to be...
I just assumed that every time Brian said it, I didn't realize it needed said out loud. I thought we all kind of just understood.
Yeah, I mean, I usually call you Ricky Ollie, kind of like Ricky Bobby, but Ricky Ollie instead.
That's not what you normally call me, Brian, but I think it's X-rated for us to say what you normally call me.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, when I'm talking work to the other folks, I'm like, yeah, Ricky Aller did the graphics on this fella, you know? That's how I say it, too.
Graphics.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Lovely, lovely graphics.
That's my NASCAR talk, which sounds a lot like my Martinsville, Indiana talk.
It sounds a lot like Larry the Cable Guy.
It does?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it does, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Moving along swiftly from nicknames for me that sound like a part of the male anatomy. Blake, I saw you get in a little bit of internet, I would say internet fisticuffs, but it wasn't really. It was very polite. But there was a comment on one of your posts about who really invented heavy metal.
Oh, you mean not the entire point of the video at all? Just kind of a little segue that somebody needed to make a big deal about?
Just a little tiny little, you know, comment that had to blow up and destroy your router. But
I don't know anything about this.
Well, Brian, if you spent less time thinking of jokes to make about my name and more time reading what Blake's writing, then you'd have seen it. But
that's a good point.
It did get me thinking because... So received wisdom, for me, has always been, yes, okay, Helter Skelter, but really, who did invent heavy metal? Was it Black Sabbath? Obviously, people say that's where it really came from.
See, I don't know how one defines this. Like, what do you even call heavy metal? And how do you know? You mean who popularized it or who made it?
Tones.
That's I was talking really about Tony Iommi, okay, in a video, and I said, arguably the inventor of heavy metal is what I said.
I would go with that, yeah.
Yeah. That's... And I even used the term arguably because I could see where maybe he's not technically the inventor of heavy metal.
Or at least made the idea of it popular, maybe. Was Iommi first or was Maiden first?
Sabbath was definitely
Sabbath
first.
Sabbath were well before Maiden, sir.
Were they?
Oh yeah.
An insult to the black country.
When was Black Sabbath? What was their?
Well, way earlier than most people realize. Really?
Was it that early? Okay.
Yeah. I don't know when they first got together.
I weren't even born back then, so I don't know.
Lies. But I think also Steppenwolf were considered one of the originators as well.
Really?
I think so. 1968, Black Sabbath were formed. And look, I've been to where
Sabbath
they come from.
Sabbath and Hendrix were like right next to each other.
Right next to each other. I mean, imagine that. Imagine 1 year hearing Voodoo Child and the next year hearing Iron Man. It kind of right. shows how crap so drastically our charts different. Are right now, right? It's like...
That's exactly what I was literally thinking. Like, two totally different genres right next to each other. Great songs. And yet we have like Jelly Roll or whatever. I mean, I don't really listen to Jelly Roll. I guess he's good, but I don't know. You would say Luke Bryan. Is that? That's what you would say.
Like, yeah,
Luke Bryan, right next to whoever.
Don't say his name too many times or he'll appear.
So look, I mean,
do know some of those guys in that band that are really good people.
For me, the classic kind of trilogy of Deep Purple, Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin were what pioneered heavy metal for me. But there is a lyric in the Steppenwolf song Born to Be Wild about heavy metal, and people say that that was the spark, as it were. But I would say what for me really started it was the guitar tones of like Dave Davis from the Kinks. You right. really got me with the, you know, slashed speaker.
Around, so you like that? That's an era I did not care for much.
I mean, firstly, of course, I love the Kinks. They're one of the greatest British exports ever. But in America, for some reason, the only song you know is like the novelty song Lola, because it's got the words cherry cola in it, which you obviously relate to because there's sugar in it.
No, actually, that song, I was not a big fan of that song.
What song were you a big fan of from...
Of the Kinks?
Yeah.
Name some songs.
Well, there is You Really Got Me, which was, of course, covered by yeah. your favourite 80s hair metal rockers.
Yeah.
Waterloo Sunset is one of my favourite, Bri. Now, that will not resonate with an American because it is very British.
I only recognise two of these. You Really Got Me and Lola. And I would say You
All
Really
Day and
Got
All of
Me.
The Night, surely.
I'd have to... It doesn't... The name of the song.
It's only the song that The Doors ripped off with Hello, I Love You. Exactly the same riff.
Again, another band I'm not really that fond of, but they're okay.
Wow.
I mean, they're all right. You know, I mean, I respect them. I just don't want to, I would never pull up one of their songs.
Have you never heard the song it's Dedicated just Follower of Fashion?
Or are you a...
No. No idea what you're talking about. I mean, mind if I heard blown. The song, maybe... But this is, I didn't grow up on this stuff. I grew up on like hair metal, you know, like Dokken and Motley Crue.
And we're trying to figure out where
Van
that came
Halen
from.
And Scorpions and the old Def Leppard, you know.
So I'm just thinking about Rush, the original question, like who invented heavy metal? Like a lot of the examples that we were talking about all are in the same era.
Right.
They're like all right in the same couple of years.
Right.
So did any one of them invent it? Like the fella that was arguing with me on the post was saying that it was definitely Helter Skelter. And I'm like, Helter Skelter is definitely a rockin' song. It's heavy. Nothing had really quite hit like that before.
Beatles had a ton of different stuff that was just all over the place. Like how do you categorize it, you know?
So some people do say Helter Skelter is the first heavy metal song, and I could see that. But again, it's just like, but Sabbath took it to another level. Like, listen, I mean, it's just, they were the first people to really insert that, you know, dark, scary thing into heavy metal.
I mean, Revolution was pretty heavy.
Revolution's heavy, but not scary.
And I got to tell you, though, yeah, I've got a great demo. I shall share that with you another time. But you're right. I mean, look, Sabbath came from the industrial Midlands where the sound of clanging metal was very familiar because all the factories were in that area and it was a horrible part of the world. And they definitely had that in the 70s. It's much better now. They definitely had that kind of industrial vibe first, whereas Led Zeppelin were a bit more artsy, fartsy, you know,
fantasy kind of things.
Tolkien.
Yeah.
Shirt undone, look at me. But undoubtedly a very heavy band. And Deep Purple, of course, one of the greatest bands of all time, probably don't get enough of a say in this argument because I guess people view them a bit more like hard rock. But again, you know, what's hard rock? What's heavy metal? Is AC/DC metal? Is Iron Maiden metal? I'd say Iron Maiden is. I'd call AC/DC hard rock, but it's a blur.
It is such a blur. How do you define it in a nice, neat little category like that? I don't know.
So I don't think you can. So for me, I think it's the guitar tones. I think it is the use of distorted guitar that for me really signals the start of hard rock and heavy metal.
But I also think it's the riffs. Like, Iommi's playing is very bluesy, but it's all like, it's downtuned, first of all. Like, he was the first one to like really popularize strictly downtuned guitars. I mean, he did that out of necessity because of his accident with his fingers. But, you know, the way that that sounds and the slower kind of down, like that whole vibe just hadn't happened
before. I love the bit
before.
Of wah you added at the end there. Don't think I didn't notice you like the little modulation you did with your mouth.
I appreciate that you noticed that. I did that on purpose. Yes.
Love that. look, and they had it all going for them because they had arguably one of the greatest, you know, front men of all time in Ozzy Osbourne.
Ronnie James Dio.
Who was also great, but clearly Ozzy Osbourne in his heyday was groundbreaking. And then you've got Bill Ward, who absolutely powered through a drum kit. Geezer Butler, who was at the speed of, well, speed most likely. And of course, Tony Iommi, who had no fingers and, you know, thought, that's it, I'm giving up. And then his boss showed him a bit of Django Reinhardt, said, here's a washing up liquid bottle, make yourself some finger caps. And the rest is history. You know, that sound is the first Black Sabbath album is just fantastic. But even probably through to actually, yeah, right up to the Ronnie James Dio era, they continually innovated metal, I think. I think they were an incredibly important band. But there were a lot of bands around them at the time that were influenced by them, right? And I think that's...
It seems like a lot of those bands back then were kind of all influenced by each other in a very tight-knit way. Maybe it's just a nostalgia way of looking at it.
But it is true because, you know, Black Sabbath were probably watching Cream play, you know, and in Cream, you're talking about, okay, I know it's funny to say things about Eric Clapton and he certainly said some awful things, etc. But let's face it, in Cream, he kicked. It was a ridiculous
power trio.
There was
great guitar stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Politics and it wasn't aside, I don't care about that stuff. But.
Yeah, and it wasn't just Eric Clapton. I mean, Ginger Baker is one of the greatest drummers of all time. Yep. And Jack Bruce, one of the greatest bass players. But what a lovely voice. So they were fantastic. You know, so you go from the Beatles, kind of the Kinks and the Beatles and the Stones and the Faces, and then you've got bands like...
The Faces, another great...
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The Yardbirds. Oh, they only had people like Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck playing with them in later years. All these bands in this kind of new wave of British blues. Then the heavy metal thing breaks out. It's just, honestly, it was a brilliant time for music. And we're so lucky to have kind of been around when that happened. But I think for me... That's why that is the birth of heavy metal, because so much spawned from that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like Sabbath in particular, I think more directly than any of the other examples we're talking about, when we're talking about genres and metal specifically, Sabbath spawned millions of bands.
Yeah.
Like literally everybody after that.
They spawned an industry of bands.
100%. Yeah, some of the biggest bands in the world can trace their roots directly back to Black Sabbath without any convoluted, like, oh, well, maybe the fuzz, like, no, it's like, it all goes right back to Black Sabbath. So maybe they didn't do everything exactly first, but they were the first to combine it all in a way that's recognizable today, I think.
And bring it to a massive audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no,
because there's going to be some person like, yeah, there's a person I knew that played in a garage back in 1964, though. He was doing it first.
but I don't
recall hearing that song on the radio.
Right, four people heard that, and I'm sure it was great.
But of course, you know, that's the British heavy metal inception, I guess. But I'm guessing that music crossed over the pond. Who were the first American bands to sort of go, hey, listen to what these crazy long-haired acid-taking Brits are making. Let's make some of that ourselves. Who was the first kind of American metal bands, do you think?
Well, that's a little bit tough because I think a lot of people forget about this, but I actually think punk actually came first. A lot of people are like talking about the Ramones or something, but in 71, Death came out, and just anybody that heard them and has heard them since can recognize them. And I'm not talking about the metal band Death. I'm talking about the punk band Death from 71.
Yeah, not the ones with the really cool logo, the other ones.
No. But actually, I like this band better, to be honest. They started punk. And I some people describe them as proto-punk, but to me, like, you listen to them, it just sounds like punk rock. Like, that kind of preceded metal in the U.S., although, like, I still think Sabbath probably had the most influence on American metal bands.
Well, actually, topically as well, MC5 were considered to be a MC5. Kind of proto-punk mm-hmm. band. And, of course, recently, Wayne Kramer passed away, which, you know, is sad for not only fans of his music, but fans of music in general, because they were an absolute iconic band. In their heyday, for sure. So I think you're right. I think there were some other things. And I mentioned Steppenwolf before. And so there were some other things going on in the US that were definitely parallel to, like, the British first wave of heavy metal, but not the same. And it's weird to think how that probably just came about in different ways on both continents. But eventually,
I'm trying to think of who would be the first band in the U.S. that
Twisted Sister,
not first, but I do like some Twisted Sister.
I mean, what about bands? If you look at bands like, I guess, like Boston and Journey, that's not heavy metal, but it's to the side
got some
of
metal
it.
Influences. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, there's some pretty heavy guitar stuff on a lot of the Journey songs. You know,
yeah. I mean, it's pretty distorted, pretty much for every song, really. I mean, there's clean parts, but there's always some sort of, like, soaring,
I guess I'm thinking
lead.
Of, like, Stone in Love, which was, like, 1980 or something. That was a very heavy guitar-based song. And it was Journey, you know?
Yeah, so
let's see what Google says. First American heavy metal band. Let's see what Google has to say.
Yeah, Google just kept on pulling up Led Zeppelin and Sabbath for me. You know what? I'm going to ask Google Gemini. Let's ask Google Gemini real quick.
I've heard this cover before.
Bard.
That's right. Bard 2.0.
Google is trying to tell me that Blue Cheer, when they did a cover of Summertime Blues, many consider it to be the first true heavy metal recording. I've heard that. I don't know that I fully agree with that, but trying to think of, like, who would be the first, like, popular heavy metal band.
There's only one thing we can do here, folks. There's only one option.
Funnily enough, one of the bands that gets mentioned is
ChatGPT.
Yeah, exactly right.
One of the bands that gets mentioned is Vanilla Fudge, who were one of the links between psychedelia and heavy metal. Once, when I may or may not have taken a small square piece of paper that may or may not have been soaked with some psychedelic drug, I spent an hour laughing at the back of the first Vanilla Fudge album. Their pictures are so cheesy. I was just looking at the portrait. I didn't believe it was a real band for a long time. And
maybe Alice Cooper? Cooper would be up there.
Again,
right?
Alice Cooper's right up there, except his first album's kind of jazzy, Bri. It's kind of jazzy rock. Well, his first few albums were kind of jazzy rock, fusion-y, especially Welcome to My Nightmare, which sounds like it should be the darkest thing on the planet, but it's actually a beautiful album of kind of really well-crafted harmonies and not so much of the riffing, you know? Because I think you came onto something there with the riffing. I think the riffing mm-hmm. is massive.
I'd have to say Van Halen. Van Halen would have to, in North America, would have to be the catalyst for heavy metal.
You think so?
I don't think they're the catalyst.
I mean, Eddie kind of made it popular, though, to have a lot of gain and a lot of just very bluesy pentatonic riffs with a lot of gain.
There has to be somebody in between, like, who heard Black Sabbath in 1971 or 72 and come up with a concept for an American version of that before Van Halen.
There is one band, and I feel bad to mention them because, of course, I've been learning one of their songs. There's one band that we're not mentioning here from the American canon, and that is The Smith of Aero. That
yeah, that's true. Yeah, Aerosmith for sure.
I mean, they were instrumental in the journey of the American sound, I think. Because they obviously didn't start off heavy.
They definitely were. They're definitely very, very important. But again, I slide them more into the AC/DC category. Like,
yeah, it's more like hard. I guess back then we would say hard rock. Now we call it classic rock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, is AC/DC hard rock or metal? There are camps hard that rock. Say, yeah, right. But for me, hard rock and metal are basically, that's like volume at 8.5 and volume at 8.6 for me. There's so little difference between the hardest heavy, hardest hard rock and the lightest heavy metal that they're basically, you know, just two shades of the same palette for me. Trying to come up with clever metaphors.
Maybe
and
Kiss?
Listeners. Kiss? Actually, that's a great shout. I naturally never think of Kiss, but they were.
I don't either.
Yeah, because let's face it,
most both Kiss and Alice suck. Cooper.
No, I'm joking.
Look, some of them are really bad. But Kiss and Alice Cooper both have the same kind of thing going on, where they both look way scarier than they sound.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Alice Cooper revved it up. So in the 80s, one of my favorite albums is probably considered one of Alice Cooper's worst albums is Raise Your Fist and Yell, which, you know, 13-year-old Ricky Ollie, not Dick, Ricky Ollie, was very much into that sound. Kane Roberts on the guitar, ridiculous, shreddy, like kind of arpeggiated riffs. That was some good stuff. But early Alice Cooper, you know, you're right, looked scary. And same with, you know, for me, Kiss and Alice Cooper are more analogous to the music of David Bowie in that area than they are of Tony Iommi, I guess.
Maybe this is going to make some people mad, but let's just talk about music and not politics here. What about Ted Nugent?
I think that's a good shout.
Ted Nugent has... It's popular to hate on Ted Nugent. Ted Nugent says some crazy things that I vehemently disagree with. That said, Stranglehold freaking rules. That song is awesome.
There's some of those old songs, man. They have a ton of guitar, you know?
And he's a great player and a great songwriter, even though some of his songs are rather creepy in retrospect. But Stranglehold...
There's some questionable things.
There's some very questionable things going on there, Ted. Might want to rethink some of that. But you can't deny the guitar work of Nuge. It's great. It's undeniably great. Just is.
Yeah. It is a shame politics has to ruin things, because I agree. I don't even really know much about his politics other than I probably wouldn't get
along
with him. Yeah. Exactly. But I've heard him play and he can shred.
Not be into it.
He can absolutely shred. And I love his, I feel like he brought the Birdland back to like popularity, and that's a cool guitar.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Good call that. Yep. For sure.
I've seen a video of him going over his collection of vintage Birdlands, and it was like, So that's, I know that's a jazz box, but man, the things are so sick.
He used it for things other than jazz.
He sure did.
I mean, I was like really into like ZZ Top as well, like the bluesier before Eliminator type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that wouldn't really call that metal necessarily.
That's a blues rock trio right there. Love ZZ Top. It seems, but you might be onto something, Brian. It does almost seem like. It can't be Van Halen, though. There's got to be somebody in between there.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I mean,
Van Halen had some pretty metal-y songs whenever.
Oh, absolutely.
Dave wasn't dressed up in spandex, you know.
Was Dave ever not?
He was always dressed up in spandex. But I mean, they still had some pretty heavy songs.
Oh, they absolutely did.
I mean, Unchained is just pure metal, you know.
Van Halen's one of those ones that I think really blurs the line between hard rock and heavy metal. Like they're the ones riding. If Richard's saying it's 8.5 to 8.6, Van Halen's like 8.5.75. You know, they turn it up to 10 sometimes. Though, let's be honest, they do.
Again, or 11, look like a heavy metal band. You know, they've got the hair, they've got the spandex, they've got the instruments, but. more on the hard rock, maybe, with just guitar virtuosity in there, that we'll likely never see again. But yeah, it is interesting to think about it, because in this country, you know, being the cultural leaders of the world, as of course we are, we grow up knowing our history of music. But I've never really thought about the development of American heavy metal and realized that it did. And again, you know, funny insults aside, it lagged behind the kind of English development by 5 or 6 years, probably, I think.
It did, because we didn't get the American, like, equivalent in my brain to Sabbath until we started seeing, like, the big four of thrash come out.
Yeah. That's right. And funnily enough, it was it was Anthrax that made me love Black Sabbath, because I had their cover of Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, on the B-side of I'm the Man, and used to listen to it before I'd even really listened to
any.
I had
forgotten about that,
it got into my bloodstream. And then when I was probably 15, 16, I went round a friend's house, again, may have taken some small pieces of paper that may have had some...
You seem to like to stick little small pieces of paper in your mouth, sir.
There was a period of my life where I ate a lot of paper. But I heard that album, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, and I took the vinyl from him. I was like, I'm having this, dude. This is one of the best things I've ever heard. It's a great album. It is interesting, but going back to it, Blake, you're wrong, and the internet is right.
Okay, that's fine.
Good. Into the half an hour conversation about music.
Yeah, that's the show for today. Thanks for joining us.
Into the punk rock side of things, though, a little bit more. Now I'm thinking about this. Right around the same time, so Black Flag and a bunch of others were getting really popular in the mid to late 70s.
I was going to ask when Black Flag was.
Yeah, I think 76, if I remember correctly. 74, 70, yeah, I think 76 is when they formed. They were originally called Panic, and then I don't know when they changed to Black Flag. I love Black Flag so much.
I got into Black Flag in the mid-80s, though. Mid to late 80s.
Yeah, but that's when most people heard of them by that point.
Or I think I only know about 3 Black Flag tracks.
Oh, wow.
I probably need to have a deep dive.
I had several albums. I mean,
We were skating at the same time, Bri, but I was listening to Anthrax and Dead Kennedys, whereas you
were probably...
I listened
to them as well. And Dead Moatman, right? That was another one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that.
Dead Moatman?
I don't know whether this is a joke you're playing on me right now.
No, this is real.
I remember that track. I'm surprised. Creamery Sunset. It was brilliant.
No, I just remember it was part of skating culture back then.
Dead Milkmen were definitely... But where I was going with the Black Flag thing is that part of the criticism that they got later in they came back in the... Anyway. During the original run of Black Flag, they started playing slower and more metal-based stuff a little later. And a lot of the original hardcore punk fans did not like that.
Really? Like which era are you thinking?
Like the very tail end of the first run with Rollins. I'm
trying to remember what. Mm-hmm. That'd be like Annihilate This Week and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I get the eras they all blend together because I wasn't around for it.
Probably the albums I like the most. Yeah, the ones when they started sounding more mainstream. That's my favorite ones.
I mean, it was just interesting because they were starting to sound literally more heavy metal. Yeah, and okay, people like the guys in Huntington Beach did not like that.
1985 Black Flag is the first album I bought, which was called Loose Nut. It was about fixtures, though, you know, screws and...
The first bolts. Album you ever bought.
That was my first Black Flag album.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, so, like, if your first album you ever bought was Black Flag, I'm like, this explains everything.
The first one I got was Damaged, and that's definitely got slower, sludgier stuff on it. And I think that's actually the one that was probably the most polarizing, was Damaged.
I may have said this before on the show, but when I first heard, sort of talking about punk music, when I first heard the Sex Pistols record, Nevermind the Bollocks, I was almost in tears at how much it changed my worldview about everything. I was like, I didn't know you could make music this angry, this political, this loud. I was like, this has changed me. This record has changed me, which is why, despite the historical truth that punk started in the United States, I will always say that real punk started with Johnny Rotten, even though it probably started with New Rose, but that's another story.
Even though the Sex Pistols were a boy band.
Manufactured boy band. But it doesn't matter. John Lydon was a very interesting chap. He's become
the whole band's interesting. Shill.
Yeah, no, they are very, very much.
They really
yeah.
are. Like the whole, yeah. even that, I'd say that joking. Like they were an important band for me too.
Interesting.
Because you got to remember, like I'm finding all this stuff way after it happened. So I'm in the throes of like the 2000s punk and metal like explosion, and people are referring to Sex Pistols and Black Flag, and I'm reading articles and books about them, and I had never heard them before. I didn't know who those bands were, so I had to go back and find them, and it, like tying the threads all together was really it was a really important part of like my musical upbringing. That was all just like this self-education, diving through bins of CDs at stores and everything, just trying to learn about all this stuff to find like how it was influencing the bands that I grew
wasn't
up
that
loving.
So much fun though, reading magazines, buying books about music. Upstairs in my like kind of bookshelves, I got all these books that I bought in the 80s and 90s about bands like Joy Division and The Cure, because they weren't on TV, they weren't on radio, and you wanted to find out more. Now, just type it into the old Google machine and it all comes back to you. Blake's disappeared.
I got a book for you. This, you gotta read this book.
Yeah.
It's called Please Kill Me. The Uncensored Oral History of Punk. It is fantastic. You gotta read that book.
Hmm. Okay. I've got one for you. I'm not sure I'll get the order right, but it was based on a sign outside of pubs in England back in the 60s. And it's John Lydon's first autobiography, which is called No Blacks, No Dogs, No Irish, which is apparently a sign that used to be put outside pubs. It's brilliant. It's a great little snippet of punk in England in that era, because he is a, if nothing else, he's a good writer. Anyway, enough about music. Let's talk about UFOs. No.
this is the most music-based show we've had in years.
Well, I did want to quickly point out, because I need to talk gear very quickly. This could be a very Fender-heavy gear burst here, even though there's a little...
Because I have to wrap up this episode.
Yeah, no, we got to wrap up quickly, but I got to say a couple of things. Did you guys see the Super Bowl? Obviously, you didn't, because it's sports ball, but did you see the glorious metallic red Stratocaster that HER was playing?
HER.
I didn't see
that's what I'm referring
any
to.
Of that at all.
Dude, it's great.
I did see the Stratocaster, but I've not seen the performance yet.
From the performance I saw, she was miming anyway, so I'm not even slightly interested. The guitar looks the absolute mutts nuts. I have to say, I've been thinking about candy apple red, and that's a nice candy apple red color.
It is a beautiful guitar.
Chrome red, I think they've called it. Eric Johnson and Fender are developing a Strat with onboard overdrive, Bri. Now, as we all know, yeah, great idea, but what if you want to put your delay before overdrive? You can't.
Well, keep in mind, this is Eric's guitar. He's not going to do that.
Yes, but keep in mind, he's making it to sell to everybody. And they're not Eric.
I mean, I don't know. I wonder what overdrive circuit he went with. I know he was using a love pedal to overdrive quite a bit.
Well, I've got a bit of info for you, Bri. He reached out to a gentleman who, well, we'll just call him, I don't know, the English British King of Fuzz. And he may have hooked him up with a little circuit he invented, which he called the Sumness. Apparently, it's an original circuit way stolen from his employers.
It looks nothing like the Klon derivatives at all.
Nothing in no way stolen from his employers. Interesting.
That's all I got for you this week. I mean, I have got some other stuff. We'll talk about it on Patreon.
Yeah, of course, I got to wrap up. But before wrapping up, I do want to give a huge shout out to our executive producers who allow us to do another episode every week on Patreon. Big shout out to Bill Bays, Justin Burke, David Tindall, Knight Haas, Dave Trombetti, Shannon Weaver and the band Reduced to Rust, Eric Wilson, Vidar Frosted, Michael Freer, Sean Arbo of Gun Street Wiring, Rick Calhoun of Honey Picks, Patrice Fournaise, Dylan Talks Tone, Scientific Uppercut, Kevin Harrington, Barry from Grez Guitars, Tom Kelly, Jake Young of the Man the Helm podcast, Pigsy, John O'Neill, Robert Carr, Hunter Hudson, Rob Stokes, LG Barrito, Nick Spano, Sasha Sir, Jay Stratton, Seth Williford, Harry Post, Grumpy Mike, Harby Pedals, Allison Carroll, Patrick Zeller, Bum Laser, Anthony Stevens, Chris Brown, Philip Carter of the 40 Watt Podcast, Mark Bowman, Christopher Logan, Jason Englehart, The Crowhawk, and Dylan Lewis. Thanks, everyone. And if you're one of the lucky people who pay just like the price of a cup of coffee every month, you now get another episode on Patreon. We'll see you over there. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Dome podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com and I'll personally get your email. To email Blake, simply email info@tonemob.com and Richard can be reached at richard@wamplerpedals.com. If you'd like to show your support for the show, the simplest and free way to do that is to share this podcast with a friend, leave a review and a rating wherever you normally get your podcasts. Also, check out Blake's podcast called The Tone Mob. And make sure you check out WamplerPedals.com for blogs, videos, and of course, guitar effects. If you'd like to hear the post-podcast conversations and to get even more content, twice the amount of podcast episodes, simply check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ChasingTonePodcast. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.